Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget J. Paul Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next, a dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race, equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Good morning and welcome to What's Next. I am Michael Loss, one of your guest hosts, joined shortly by Jay Moran, the host of What's Next. And today we're going to talk about housing in Niagara Falls, specifically the Mid-City Housing District. We're going to talk about a Mid-City Housing and Community Assessment Report that was researched by Niagara University and its associates. And in studio today, we have two of the associates on that project. We welcome in Gina Beam, the Executive Director of the Niagara Area Habitat for Humanity, and Matt Chavez, the Program Manager at the Niagara Orleans Regional Land Improvement Corporation, affectionately known as NORLIC. Thank you so much for being with us today, guys.
Hi, thank you.
Thank you.
It's a pleasure being here.
So the first thing I want to get into, talking about the city of Niagara Falls, we'll get into the Mid-City District specifically, but what brought both of you to Niagara Falls? And talk a little bit about what your work has been like in the community so far.
Well, I'm a transplant from St. Louis, Missouri, and my husband and I actually came here over 20 years ago. He actually works at Niagara University. He worked at the Castellani Art Museum. And so that's sort of what brought us here. And when the opportunity opened up for me to take the executive director position at Habitat, I was thrilled to be able to work in the area and, you know, stay up in Niagara County so that I didn't have quite a drive as how I was doing it earlier when I was driving to Buffalo. But yeah, it's been a good, I'm proud of the work we're doing and I feel like we're stepping it up. There's starting to be some synergy around some different things. So, you know, for me, it's very exciting to see this happening.
I, Michael, like you, am a graduate of Niagara University, 2008, a little while ago. And I remember Main Street and this district from being a student and driving up and down just to go back and forth downtown. I ended up going to UB for urban planning, and my recent employment before going to the land bank was with Housing Opportunities Made Equal, doing fair housing work. And so I felt like shifting to a focus on housing delivery and revitalization was a good move, and I wanted to go back to Niagara because I remember the need for, you know, good urban planning there.
Yeah, let's break down the Mid-City section of Niagara Falls. Let's get that under control, because not only just its geography, but also some of the elements that make up this particular part of Niagara Falls, and also, you know, what are the challenges ahead here?
So the Mid-City neighborhood that they defined, the city, Habitat and the land bank, all of us agreed on this area between Whirlpool Street, which is essentially the gorge, Hyde Park Boulevard, which doesn't include the park, North Street, north on the north end, and then I think it's Linwood or Whitney down at
Whitney,
the Whitney down at the south end. So, and it's like a rhombus sort of shape, and it encompasses quite a swath of I would say neighborhood conditions, because obviously there's the Main Street corridor, which is fairly large, and then there's other sort of pockets of residential areas that I would say are, you know, nice and that are, you know, stable. And then there is very distressed areas within the district. And you can often drive from block to block and see the shift as you sort of go from Main Street to Hyde Park. It sort of gets, you can see the shift.
Yeah. And so can you go a little bit more in depth as to why, out of all the areas in the city of Niagara Falls, why the Mid-City District? Obviously, you just went into some of the iconic parts of it. You know, we can talk about DiCamillo's Bakery. We can talk about Rapids Theater. But what drew this project, and you two personally, what drew you guys to Mid-City?
Well, I think through my lens, through the Habitat lens, what's important is we want to make sure that when we are either building or rehabbing a home, that we're not putting folks on an island so that they have success. You know, we don't want to, and because this area has, you know, homes, owner-occupied homes, renters, that sort of thing, it was a good opportunity to, bring some other folks to the neighborhood, but also, it's not plopping a family down in a neighborhood that really has just a bunch of abandoned properties on it. So, and there's some grocery store there, and we were trying to get local businesses, so that there is some walking traffic and things like that as well.
Yeah, and for Norlick, I think, a lot of our work tends to focus on how the resources that we have can leverage other state, local, nonprofit resources. So our relationship with Habitat, we try to use to extend, what we can give to the community, in other words. So the Mid-City neighborhood contains the segment of downtown that was granted the Downtown Revitalization Initiative from New York State for $10 million. So this is just one example of how we and, our partners with Niagara University, et cetera, with the study, are looking at this area to say, okay, there is a synergy happening here now. How do we study it in order to take advantage of that and take the best next steps?
It's interesting, inside your report, which covers a lot of ground, and so I'm going to kind of maybe jump around with some of the concepts, but one of the things that you look at is under investments, and one of it is the removal of the Robert Moses Parkway. And I'm just curious, off the bat, that was highly touted when it was happening a few years back. Has it produced the kind of results that, or is it at least maybe, like you said, part of the synergy that's happening that in that neighborhood that might be showing some real signs of optimism?
Well, I can provide some anecdotal, sort of, I'm down on Main Street quite often just doing field work and taking care of our buildings. That 2010 Main Street is one of our properties down there. And I will note that people are stopping on Main Street because the traffic has increased. People will drive down Whirlpool. It is a park road that is very convenient to get people between Lewiston and Niagara Falls. But by and large, there is more traffic heading down Main Street. And at this moment, it's what's going on here. But that what's going on here is causing people to stop at those murals and take a picture at the Imagine the Possibilities mural on 2018 Main Street, or, go to the book corner and, take a second look. And I'll, just again, anecdotally for myself, if I'm showing someone our building, I will walk them down Cleveland Avenue, cross Whirlpool about, 20 yards to the gorge where there's a bench, and you can see a view of Niagara Falls that you can't replace and you can't get anywhere else in the world. And people from everywhere come here just to see it. Mm-hmm. And it's there.
So while it's not a silver bullet, you most certainly are seeing it as being something that's going to become, or already is, a key factor in this neighborhood, something that perhaps as time goes on here, it's going to be more and more highlighted.
Absolutely. And I think that you mentioned a term, silver bullet. Like, this moment, I think, calls for the thinking of sort of rebuilding the fabric of what was in the neighborhood already. So Main Street is, people remember it as a thriving shopping district where people would go to Jen's and DiCamillo's and, all of these other iconic Niagara Falls retail outlets. And it all is still there. It needs a great level of investment. But what happened for a number of years is single ownership of 35, 50, you know, any number of properties by a single entity. And I think the number right now is 38 that one entity had owned for, I want to say, at least 25 or 30 years, whether it was an individual from Youngstown or a holding corporation from Buffalo. This sort of tight grip that they had on all of these properties prevented their further development. So I think the thinking is to make it more open and make it more, you know, agreeable to the small and mid-sized developer who wants to take on a property or two properties, or, you know, open a mixed use sort of, you know, coffee shop with apartments, that kind of thing, rather than, you know, someone coming in and saying, we're going to spend $30 million and fix Main Street, because it's just, you know, that's been tried.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, you know, you were saying there were only really two owners that had lots of property, which really caused disinvestment in the area. Not just you couldn't just really invest, but it was disinvestment because the money went elsewhere. And we're seeing the product of that now. You know?
Absolutely. And that's the term that, like, in is disinvestment. And that's, you know, you talk about Niagara Falls as a place has suffered from 50 years of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you mentioned the Downtown Revitalization Award. So really quickly, I do want to get into that. We've been talking about synergy, right? And with that downtown revitalization effort, that's where you see the Niagara University at Cleveland Ave at the First Congressional Church, right? And obviously this housing report that we're talking about today is in partner with Niagara University as well as a bunch of other associates. So I got to ask, we're on the topic of synergy. We got to talk about the amount of partners involved in this project. Obviously, I mentioned Niagara University. Matt, you're representing Norlick. Gina, you're representing Habitat for Humanity. Mm-hmm. But you're also involved with the city of Niagara Falls. You're involved with local initiative support corporations. You know, that's quite the A-team you guys got there. And that's quite a variety of different people who all have different goals on how to solve one issue. And you've all come together kind of to look at housing in mid-city. So what does that communication look like? Is there any stepping on toes, or is there kind of like a balanced communication on this is mid-city housing and here's how we're going to approach it with all the different avenues that we all come from?
Yeah, I will say that it was one of my goals and dreams to work with LISC. LISC is a great organization. Yeah. Tyra Hux over Johnson Hux over at the at LISC is just fantastic in seeing that this was, you know, needed and providing the funding for this study.
Right.
And Kevin Forma at the city is doing magnificent things. I mean, he's come in, he's taken the reins, cleaned out. I mean, even just the planning department needed to be from top to bottom, you know, organized, and it's happened. And we've, you know, I can speak for us at the land bank, like we've developed a synergy there with the city where we can talk about any number of their abandoned properties, their distressed properties, you know, go to the, you know, Kevin's on our board in the interest of full disclosure. So he's our board member from the city. And he'll come to us with ideas. We'll make sure that what we're doing with our funding, with our interventions, is aligned with the goals of the municipality. So we stay in lockstep with them.
Mm-hmm. When I hear mentioned of vacant properties, the city owns several properties inside the Mid-City District?
Yeah. The city, when I started, owned 800 vacant properties in the city, the total city. And in the Mid-City neighborhood, I can't give you the total number there, but they divested themselves of most of that in, I think it was 2023.
Okay.
So there was, you know, kind of the idea that the city is not a real estate developer.
Right.
We're not a real estate developer. We're a sort of a consultant to our municipal partners to deal with a problem. But we're not, you know, and Gina, maybe, you know, we're not trying to be the city's development arm, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But we do, you know, provide sort of data and, you know, services that other organizations, you know, aren't able to use their funding for in many ways.
And I'll say that Habitat is a small development agency. You know, this location, this affiliate is a very tiny one. It's not giant like Buffalo is. We do 1 to 2 homes a year, but something that we started in the last couple of years was critical home repairs. And that's really, we're doing a lot of properties in the mid-city area. The housing stock is older, so a lot of times we're looking at removing lead-based paint from homes, roof issues, electrical. We're getting houses up to code, making sure the property is functioning well and looking. We're trying to beautify the area as well, but really we're trying to keep families in their owner-occupied homes so that they can build wealth generationally instead of having to buy a new home somewhere else that might put their costs over the top for them.
Well, Michael mentioned earlier about, and I don't know if it was on air or before, about the housing stock is very old. I shouldn't be totally surprised when it comes to that. You can look in the city of Buffalo and find very similar, mm-hmm. obviously, especially in some of the more rundown neighborhoods. That being stated, though, with that, and you're saying that there's a big focus then on improving these and making them more up to date and perhaps more attractive for a more right. vibrant retail market or resale market.
Right. Our number one goal with Habitat is to build affordable homes for families that otherwise may not be able to have the dream of homeownership. So if we can provide critical home repairs, you know, the things that are code enforcement, you know, where they're that bad that it's code of enforcement issues, if they can stay in their homes, that, you know, we're not only just helping beautify, but we're bringing, between the critical home repairs and building, we're bringing more people to the area. Is it a slow process because we're a small Habitat affiliate? Yes, it is. And we've been growing capacity at our affiliate, but, you know, we want to invest in the families. All the research that has been done with Pew, with Habitat International, all of that kind of thing says that when you have people that feel safe in their homes, that aren't worried about, you know, can I pay the heating bill, that sort of thing, they're going to be more community involved. The kids are going to do better in schools. So rather than having them in a rental property that maybe they have to go from one property to another that a landlord owns and maybe doesn't take as great a care of.
I've heard that happens occasionally. Yep.
Yep. Yeah. We want to be able to provide them their own home. They do get a mortgage. It is a myth that Habitat homes are free. They are not. but we provide, we give the families a mortgage. Well, we don't give them a mortgage. they get a mortgage through a bank. And so we're giving a hand up rather than a hand out. And we're trying to do that in the whole area that this report is on.
Right, Mid-City.
Yeah, and so Matt, I do want to pose a question to you though, because Gina kind of got a little into it, but you know, she talked a little bit about the limited generational wealth building opportunities, and most of that is due to homeownership affordability. Some of it is due to the variety in homeowners, such as the fact that 22% of homeownership in Mid-City is out of town landlords. So when you're approached with that pie which has all these triangles in it, and you see that big slice of the pie being out of town landlords, what does that mean for maintenance? What does that mean for the people that are living there? What does that mean for their opportunities? Because they're stuck renting, and they're renting to an out-of-town landlord that might not be in tune with the issues of Mid-City, or might not even be tuned with the area of Western New York at all.
Well, I don't want to miss an opportunity to say how grateful I am to Habitat for having a home repair program, for focusing on it, because it speaks directly to what you're saying, the keeping your home. The best home is often the one you already are in, mm-hmm. you know, the one you already own. And speaking of, you know, just neighborhood development, the best building is the one that's already there. The most environmentally friendly one is the one that's already there. You know, so really building up the housing stock for individuals is going to require investments on the state level, the local level, and, you know, support like Habitat is doing to individual homeowners. We, you know, look at our networks. For example, Jocelyn Gordon is the executive director of Benlick, the Buffalo Land Bank. So she's also the president of the New York Land Bank Association. So we tap into resources in Syracuse and in Buffalo, and we talk to them about, you know, how do we make it so that this neighborhood, which has suffered from disinvestment and, you know, population loss, can come back in a holistic way. So, and that requires rehabbing some houses. It requires building new houses, and it requires, you know, demolishing some houses that have to go, some buildings that have to go, and making way for either, you know, a common urban problem that, you know, would plague a family that owns a property in one of the, in the mid-city neighborhood, is the fact that it's often underwater. You know, you think I own a home that's a valuable asset, and that's not always the case. Sometimes you own an obligation, you know, mm-hmm. and people have to essentially dispose of these properties, and they get caught up with, you know, buy cash property, you know, all of that kind of sort of shadow industry. And yes, the out-of-town landlords will swoop in and say, well, we'll give you $20,000 for your home so you can just walk away, and they owe more in the back taxes. But, you know, again, talking of those home repair programs and how critical they are, if that intervention isn't done, if there's nothing to stop the owners, that the family or the individual or whomever that owns the property and occupies it, then it's going to either go to that out-of-town investor, that, you know, that person that has no connection to the community, or else it's going to go into foreclosure, and we're going to end up dealing with it as a community.
And I think what's important to state is that critical home repairs, the ones that we're working on, lead to our next initiative that we're exploring and really trying to build capacity around, which is neighborhood revitalization. And Habitat has a long history of not only building homes, but doing neighborhood revitalization that has worked. And like you, Matt, working with different land banks and that sort of thing, that's one thing that I have as well, is a network of Habitat for Humanities across the nation that have had similar experiences like Niagara Falls is going through. And so I can talk to them and see what has worked and what programs and what kind of grants and different things that we can try to get to reinvest in the area. But neighborhood revitalization is really key to that area, I believe.
Yeah. And to that, you know, what I would say in my experience, because we focus on like a revitalization strategy that mm-hmm. involves, you know, like we'll fix a house, we'll stabilize a house, and then we'll find out what's going on with the neighbor's house. Can we connect them to a resource? Can we connect them to And the thing that gives me a lot of hope for the city of Niagara Falls is I go out a lot into our properties, and I have never gone out, not once, to a broken, you know, to a vacant property and gone inside of it and haven't had somebody come up to me and ask me, what are you doing?
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The neighbors care. They're involved. The people care. You know, there is a sense of community, and it's just latent in the economic sense. You know, there's opportunity to build community, for sure.
And Gina, if you could maybe just give us a ballpark of a certain amount. But when you're talking about these repairs and renovations, that, you know, I was in the last couple of years re-roofed my very small, modest ranch house. I go into these neighborhoods on the east side, and I see these older homes where those roofs look like they are obviously they need help, mm-hmm. and can only be considerably more complicated and more expensive.
Oh, yes.
So what about that? Can you give us kind of an idea of the costs that we're talking about here? Because it sounds like such a great concept. Repair these homes, fix them up, make them available, make them, you know, something that somebody can utilize as a certain amount of generational wealth. So what about the cost? What are we looking at?
Sure. So we are working with the City of Niagara Falls and community development. And a lot of the funds that we get are through community development block grants. And that's through HUD and also home grants. And we are a community housing development organization. We've been granted that that name so that we are doing development work in that area, and so we can get a pot of funds that like typically a landlord would not be able to get. So that's how we're using the investment. And what it is, you're right, a lot of these are roofs. We're seeing that a lot of these repairs, we go in and there's a lot of lead abatement, roof repairs, electrical work, plumbing. We're talking about critical home repairs that cost $25,000, $35,000. And we work with the families that own the home so that they will sign a lien on their home so that if they stay in the property, that loan is forgiven over time, but it's over a number of years that they have to say that, yes, we are going to stay in the area, or we're going to stay in the property, actually. But they also provide sweat equity. So they're working alongside our contractors that have, you know, like if it is a licensed thing that we have to fix, we use a licensed contractor. But if there's other things where they could help us with drywall or, you know, something like that, we take advantage of volunteer opportunities and sweat equity hours, so to keep the costs down on that level.
Okay, so it meets a lot of different goals if you can,
right,
if you can achieve them. Let's take a time out with our conversation here. We're getting deep down into some of the weeds here with this Mid-City Housing and Community Assessment, but it's a fascinating look, I think, not only of Niagara Falls, but I think of a lot of the issues that reflect a lot of communities here in Western New York, including the City of Buffalo. Our guests, Matt Chavez and Gina Beam. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Come along with middle school history teacher Corey as he travels through time to teach what's beyond the textbook.
So remember, history surrounds you and includes you.
Watch Compact History on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Our mission at Buffalo Toronto Public Media is to serve our local community. And on WBFO, we do that by keeping you informed and connected to your community, whether it's by hearing from a local Black poet about what it was like to move from the inner city to the suburbs on What's Next.
So that emotional change with that culture change combined led me realize that basketball and being physical wasn't enough. I needed a way to figure out my emotions. So the first poem I wrote in the cafeteria of Sweet Home Middle School was Outcast.
Or it's exploring the East Side Garden Walk.
It's wonderful that we're seeing engagement in beautification and sharing gardens, because we believe that we can build more vibrant communities by sharing our gardens, by sharing our stories, and by building real connections between people. We came through as neighbors and cleaned this space out and began plot by plot putting plants in.
This is Public Media.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Welcome back to What's Next. We're here with Gina Beam, the Executive Director of the Niagara Area Habitat for Humanity, and Matt Chavez, the Program Project Manager, mind you, at the Niagara Orleans Regional Land Improvement Corporation, talking about the Mid-City Housing and Community Assessment Report. But I want to take a jump away from the numbers in the report that we've been getting into, and I want to talk about the people of Mid-City. And pretty early on in this report, you mentioned the open house you had. And you talk a lot in this report about the community interaction. And obviously, it's so important that if you're doing such an in-depth study on an area that you know the people and you know their wants, you know what they don't want. And so could you talk a little bit about what that open house was like and just kind of overall what the community response interaction was going into this report?
You want to?
Yeah. The first thing I noted from my conversations with neighbors and folks wondering what we were doing with the study was a sense of not desperation, but just exasperation at things have been tried and nothing mm-hmm. seems to be working. And questions about what is going to happen now? What is the goal? What are you proposing to do? I gathered at that, you know, I ended up talking to a lot of real estate people because when I mentioned the land bank, they tend to want to focus on, you know, property development, development in the sense of, you know, connection to resources outside of the city to either come in and leverage new energy to, you know, finance housing, you know, restoration or else buy city properties. That was a big, you know, question that people had at that open house was, you know, when will we see the results of this initiative, basically, you know?
Yeah, I think something that's really important to say is that if you're working on neighborhood revitalization, you need the neighbors to have an input, you know. And that's something that we saw is that a lot of the folks mistrust groups trying to come in and tell them how to fix their own problem because exactly what Matt is talking about, that's happened before where, you know, someone has a great idea, but they didn't get feedback from the neighbors, the neighborhood, to see if that's something they wanted to invest in and that sort of thing. And so I think... you know, this is a study on housing, but it's also for at least on the habitat lens. It is an opportunity to talk to neighbors and those that own the homes and see what they want and what they don't want to see and really work to them to buy into the idea of reinvestment, redevelopment, you know, revitalization. And I don't want to take that away from a community. You know, I want to see the neighbors getting excited about it because then you're going to get people who are engaged in all kinds of things, engaged in their schools, engaged in community, engaged in, you know, elections. We just had the election. So, you know, I think it's important to remember this area, yes, it has been disinvested in, but these are folks that have hopes and dreams. And, you know, we want to make sure that they are an integral part of the process because it's where they are living. This is for them. And, you know, the area as a whole will get, it will have more investment if those that are already living in it agree with the ideas, you know, that are happening.
And the report breaks down the demographic makeup mm-hmm. of the neighborhood. I'm just wondering again, whether at the open house or through some of your other work in the neighborhoods, are you seeing that same reflection of interest across the board?
So it's a great question. And one of the things that I tried to do during this study was do my own outreach, because the demographics of the neighborhood are reflected very... I think the study does a great job of kind of painting the picture there with the data. But to get the connection to the districts... So one of the things I asked the Labella group to study was 18th Street.
Okay.
So 18th Street is a micro commercial district that would have had like a Wilson Farms, if you remember that, you know, and a little coffee shop at Weston Ave that we're actually working on. But I, you know, am not a resident of this neighborhood. I live in the city of Niagara Falls, but I live in LaSalle. So I don't, you know, live there every day. I don't, you know, I don't walk around and this and that, but I try to understand it. So I went to these, what's called the Entrepreneur School of Thought on 19th Street. And I spoke with as many people as I could, you know, and spoke to the group and tried to say, you know, we need ideas, we need input, we need, you know, to come to these open house events to, you know, participate with the study as much as you feel comfortable doing so, because otherwise, you know, we'll never know. And I to Gina's point, like, absolutely, the neighborhood, the community has within itself the capacity to heal itself. We just have to provide, you know, the opportunity for that to thrive, you know, and sort of get out of the way in many, many ways that a place like Niagara Falls, which has multiple sort of zones that need attention, can start to, you know, develop organically.
Yeah, and you talk a little bit about the diverse voices that you interacted with. And what's interesting in this report, as I see a variety of different figures, is it's not just housing. Right. It's the second part of this title is the community assessment. So you're talking about food access. You're talking about parks and green spaces. You're talking about transportation and mobility. And obviously, you know, that might not be your wheelhouse directly, but how does that kind of bleed over now that you know that the food access is a priority to residents? You know, how can you, in your role specifically with the land bank and with Habitat, you know, how can you aid that fight in those specific issues, even if they're not your wheelhouse?
Well, if there isn't local food access or local grocery stores and they have to go out of the area, you know, then that requires transportation costs. That requires all kinds of these other ideas that you don't really think about, you know, like at the surface level of things, but, you know, whether a neighborhood has good sidewalks, whether there is food availability, whether there are parks around. Those are all important issues that people who are looking to put down some roots want to know and want to have. So it, you know, it isn't just about a building, you know, stabilizing houses. It's about, you know, providing ideas in providing opportunities for folks. You know, if you have small children, you want to be able to bring them to a park. You want to know what that school that's right around the corner, how that school is working, and, you know, are people happy there, you know, that sort of thing. So it's all intertwined into, I mean, housing. When people think of Habitat, they think, oh yeah, they build a house, but it's, we do so much more. You know, we're working with families on financial literacy. How do you get a mortgage? How do you make sure you're making the payments correctly and on time and that sort of thing? But also, what is around you? What can you take advantage of that is in the area that you're living to provide a better existence, a community existence in, you know, in your life?
One of the things I want to point out is there is a grocery store on Main Street. It's not open, but Slipco's was a grocery store on Main Street. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I like to kind of, you know, impress upon people is the urban form of Main Street lends itself to this type of walkable development. It lends itself to building neighborhood fabric because there's small shops, there's a supermarket, there's, you know, the Jen's building could be any number of things, you know, and it's all there. You know, it's all just waiting to be restored, reactivated. And, you know, that's I think, the next step for us. And providing those services oftentimes is a matter of not just the physical condition of these buildings, but the financial encumbrances that they have on them, the taxes, the, you know, the mechanics liens, any number of things that need to be disposed of in the foreclosure process, extinguished. And that's the benefit of the land bank, is we're exempt from all of those things. So once something comes to us, we can, you know, get those things extinguished. But, you know, it really is a matter of, I think now is the time to get all hands on deck for a district like this. And this study really provides people with a good framework, and I hope it, you know, would give even developers a, you know, an idea about, you know, the community that they're investing in. Because I, you know, I get phone calls a lot in my office from people who are like, I can fix Niagara Falls.
Really?
All the time. And I mean, no disrespect. And I, you know, I encourage everybody to think about that. But, you know, it's a matter of good planning and good, you know, connection, Michael, to your point. And I'm going to butcher a Jane Jacobs quote, but it's cities work only because and only for everybody when they're built by everybody.
Right.
You know, another part of this was also this mapping tool. It's pretty interesting. I was spending some time with it before we came in on the program. So, and I, you know, my usual technical difficulties, I only got so far, I think, in its utilization. But what the mapping tool in itself, though, would be, I would think, an opportunity for whether it's a developer or whatever the case may be, to get some insight into what we're talking about here today, right?
Absolutely. And I mean, I can speak for us in terms of like our ability to pursue funding, you know, using that mapping tool, overlaying some of the disparate data that, you know, this study, this mapping tool is able to kind of put visually in one place, really, I think, tells the story that we're trying to convey, as well as, you know, I think, you know, there is some stark, you know, the stark takeaways from the current conditions. But I think knowing that and having the ability to, you know, express to a funder, express to a developer that, you know, this is where we are and these are the direct, this is the direction it could move with this intervention.
Well, and I can say that when I first became involved with Habitat, you know, trying to find the data that you need in order to purchase lots or houses or things like that. I can remember looking high and low, couldn't find anything, only to find out that I needed to speak to this one person in a department that had a paper copy of something on a specific plot of land that they had to go root through the drawer to get, and hopefully it was up to date, but a lot of it wasn't. So to be able to combine all of these archaic kinds of, you know, strategies that we used to have into an electronic form that many people can access is a huge step in the right direction. You know, it's gonna, that's something that for me was just really critical. And I think the city planner, Kevin Forma, he would say the same thing. It's, you know, just trying to get everything in one database so that it can be user-friendly, whether you can get really technical about it or like I would not be the technical one, right, you know, to do it. But at the same time, rather than trying to pick up the phone and talk to, you know, Joe Smith at this department in whatever office and seeing if he has the paperwork on it, the paperwork has been uploaded. You know, the site is going to remain focused. It's going to remain updated.
Yeah, and you know, not to get ahead of ourselves with this mapping tool for Mid-City. Obviously, we it's very early in its development in terms of usage, and we're going to see if, you know, there's private investors and realtors. But is there a sense of excitement that if this tool is effective and usable in Mid-City, that it could be something that could be useful for all of the city of Niagara Falls and all of the properties within Niagara Falls, not just the Mid-City district we're here talking about today?
There is, you know, absolutely the opportunity, I think, to expand on this study and really dive into the rest of the city of Niagara Falls. What I would say is the rest of the city of Niagara Falls is different. You know, there's a lot going on in Highland, for example, or LaSalle, which is a very different case. And then obviously, you know, a place like DeVoe is sort of, the data is going to tell you probably what you already know, you know. And I think that it would be great for the city to, you know, be able to pursue this mapping tool further, but what I would love to say is that I commend Niagara University for taking the step, for hosting this, for doing this. You know, I'm very proud of my alma mater to, you know, to be involved through the Levesque Institute, through, you know, Karen Quandrance, who was, you know, just instrumental and pivotal. Her leadership is second to none on this. And generally, you know, her influence in a lot of these projects. Niagara University is very serious about being a good neighbor, you know, like we all are, I think, in Western New York.
Let's take another time out on What's Next. We're talking about Mid-City, Niagara Falls. We'll look at a recent study that is looking to redevelop a key part of Niagara Falls, and a conversation I think also lends itself to a greater conversation as well about community revitalization here in Western New York. We know there are a lot of communities that most certainly could benefit from that. We'll take a time out. We'll come back with more. This is What's Next on WBFO.
Did you know that WNED PBS is always working on great new local shows for you to watch? Documentaries like Kleinhand's Gift to Buffalo, which tells the story of Buffalo's Music Hall.
The hall is very intimate, and that intimacy makes everyone who comes in here feel a part of our family.
Fun and educational series like Compact Science.
Believe it or not, peppers are technically fruits.
And Shakespeare's greatest hits featuring some of his best-known soliloquies and monologues.
We are such stuff as dreams are made of.
You can watch them all on our website at wned.org/local shows. While you're there, check out the show pages and mini websites for additional content such as bonus features, photo galleries, and lesson plans. Find it all at wned.org/local shows.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
Welcome back to What's Next, wrapping up our conversation here on the Mid-City Housing and Community Assessment Report. With me is Gina Beam, the Executive Director at the Niagara Area Habitat for Humanity, and Matt Chavez, the Project Manager at the Niagara Orleans Regional Land Improvement Corporation. One of the things I want to get back into, if we're going to get back into the numbers of this report, is I want to talk about the balance of people that work in Mid-City, live in Mid-City, and the variety of that. And what really stands out to me, completely popped off the page to me, is this report number that says only 60 people work and live in Mid-City. That's not even a triple-digit number.
Right.
Going down further into it, you know, 587 people work in Mid-City, but they don't actually live. And then the largest number of the three, 2,453 individuals live in Mid-City but don't work in it. So obviously there's a problem with that number. I want to talk a little bit about job-generating business sites. We're talking about revitalization. We're talking about redevelopment. How do we make sure those two things go hand in hand, where there is housing and there is jobs and we're keeping people living and working in the area? So, Gina, if you have a thought, what's your thought on that balance in Mid-City?
Oh, you started with me. Well, I would say one thing... I know we're focusing on Mid-City and wanting to have folks work and live in that area, but I just also want to mention that we're not far from Buffalo, you know, so if we can get some investment into the community, we'll have more opportunities for people to have a job in the area, but also have people coming into the area from maybe Buffalo or North Tonawanda and working in different capacities in Mid-City, in Niagara Falls as a whole as well. I think that's important. It's the most of Mid-City residents work outside of the area. And so, you know, as we're trying to reinvest in the area, we want to be able to provide opportunities for for job growth in the area, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things I love about Main Street as a district is the fact that it's all there still. It's unlike the downtown near the falls, which was urban renewal, which we won't get into. But
we could if you want.
I think that's a whole nother taping.
It's a whole other issue. But Main Street was largely spared from that. The suspension bridge, you know, what we're talking about, was largely spared from that. And I make the point to folks that I talk to that presently they're knocking down the Boulevard Mall and the Eastern Hills Mall to build little town centers that are exactly what Main Street Niagara Falls is, which is retail and parking and walkability. And if you were to reactivate those storefronts and those buildings and those businesses, all of the folks that live in the neighborhood could just walk down. Mm-hmm. You know, and you'd see that number go up, I say dramatically, you know, and I can't give you a timeline, but I think, you know, honestly, it's going to take a number of, you know, investments and initiatives on a sort of building by building level. You mm-hmm. know, I think it's going to take all hands on deck, I think, would be the analogy I'd use.
And just to follow up on that, and I love when I hear the concept of a walkable community, for sure. And I think of Lafayette Avenue here in the city of Buffalo. I know somebody who, I think they bought their house for like $20,000 on Lafayette Avenue near Grant Street maybe 10 to 12 years ago. I'm sure that house is worth 10 times that right now. Mm-hmm. And so I guess what I'm throwing out there is, are we seeing people? You were talking about investment. We keep throwing that word out there. But just that idea that, you know, this might be a place for a pioneer, an urban pioneer, somebody who wants to come in and, you know, buy their house that they can probably afford in a neighborhood like this. I mean, are we seeing that type of thing at all?
I get a lot of phone calls from people who want to invest in a place like Niagara Falls because there is only one. Mm-hmm. And there will only ever be one. And there's only that amount of land next to it. And not to harp on the single ownership, but those folks that own a lot of the properties are expecting to reap the rewards of their ownership. And, you know, I encourage the fair use of property, and the land bank wants to be there to reactivate these spaces. But the simple fact of the matter is that because the city of Niagara Falls is next to a world wonder, there will always be people who want to get something out of it for themselves, if that makes sense.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I know of a building that's very small that people want $2 million for just because it's Niagara Falls.
Mm.
But there are, to your point, houses that are $20,000 that if you put $150,000 investment in, you know, in 20 years, 15 years, it could be a $400,000 house. It's right. a mansion. You know, it's a beautiful home. And those are all through the mid-city neighborhood, you know, South Ave, Weston Ave, Niagara Ave, everywhere. You know, you have this beautiful housing stock. But, you know, it really is a matter of finding those resources. And one of the things I want to point out is that a lot of the repair programs don't address folks who are sort of right on that cusp in terms of income, that are maybe not 80% AMI, but a little bit higher, that just don't have $20,000 to fix their roof.
Right.
So, you know, I would hope that maybe the discussion could turn to mm-hmm. supporting those folks too.
Yeah, and coming up on our last minute here, so really quickly, I just want to get in this. I want to talk about the call to action with this report. What is the vision of Mid-City with all the things we talked about today? What is your hope for the future of Mid-City?
I would. Oh.
For me,
eager to right, talk right. about this.
For me, I can sum it up in two words: neighborhood revitalization. So that we see that people have an enjoyment and a quality of life that they might be lacking right now. And when you invest in an area, you're investing in their people, and they in turn invest in the area as well.
Absolutely. And I really quickly, all I would add to that, which is wonderful, I would say that, you know, given my conversations with people, given the conversation on Niagara Falls, as long as there's water flowing over it, mm-hmm. there's hope for Niagara Falls.
Right. Yeah.
We can do it.
Well, very good. I mean, this is it's a nice way to wrap up our conversation here. But if somebody wanted to find out more information about the overall report or your specific offices, what's the best way of going about doing that?
Well, they can call us at 716-265-9010.
That's for Habitat for Humanity.
That's for Habitat for Humanity. Or they can go to our website, which is niagarahabitat.org. And, you know, we're always partnering with families, and if we can't work with you, we have a lot of resources. We know a lot of other places that we can send you to, or, you know, have you collaborate with.
Yeah, Matt? I would just encourage folks to go to NiagaraOrleansLandBank.com. That'll have our properties that we are presently working on, including industrial, commercial, residential, and all of my contact information. So feel free to reach out anytime.
Well, thank you to both for being on this morning for a very deep conversation through numbers, through revitalization, and through community.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
This has been What's Next on WBFO.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.